Fastamai as Falchariu. Hello and welcome again from me, Clive Alford, to an oral history recording by members of Peel Heritage Trust. Treisht Eracht Furtnahinja. Eddie Lowy MLC was first fixed to speak to us in September 2009, but that date clashed with the Tynwald sitting, so we've had to wait until Thursday the 18th of March 2010. But it was worth the wait. Eddie started talking the moment he came through the door and continued until his sister, Jill, led him out by the arm over 2 hours later. His title was Childhood Memories, but he ranged much further than that and the audience hung on every word. Just listen.
Our speaker tonight is a Peel Gothic, unlike myself. A young lad from Duke Street. He is an MLC. And I'm sure he's got plenty to talk to us about. So thank you, Eddie. We'll give him a round of applause.
See, I'm getting told what to do already. You know.
Get near here.
Near the microphone.
And,
oh, I will.
Thanks, Eddie.
Don't have a script, you're all right, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I never keep to a script anyway. I've got a few scatter notes to help me, but anyway, there you are. First of all, can I say it is indeed a pleasure for me to come to Peel. I always feel at home in Peel, and why shouldn't I? It all happened on a Saturday night at 10:30 on the 12th of February in 1938. A mighty roar went up from just behind the prom in Duke Street, and I came into the world. And how do I remember that? Because Dorothy Quirk told me that's how it all happened. And if Dorothy said it happened, it happened. And she had to tell that little story in front of about 3,000 other people. You know, I was here presenting the awards for the first of the go-kart races that we had around the town at the time, the city. And I just paused for breath, and then Dorothy shouted out, "You made a noise when you came into this world and you're still at it, boy." You know, now that could only happen to a guest in Peel, couldn't it? You know. So, seriously, I am proud of my roots. I never cease to tell people that I'm a Gothic. You can't wash that out of your hair, no matter how long. And if you go through Michael Street, suddenly a voice will shout out to you, "Remember, you're only borrowed over the hill." Now, I left Peel in 1945, but I'm still only borrowed over the hill. My heart belongs to... I begin to sound like Lord Ashcroft, who said his heart belongs in Belize. No, my heart very much belongs in here. And this was my Sunday school. So very much, you know, this is part of me. And what I want to do today is... is just to remember some of the things that impressed me and have made me what I am. Peel certainly made me what I am, and in my adult life I'll touch on how it still influenced me, and you know, we'll just go on from there. So as I say, I was born in Duke Street and I lived in Duke Street, and my grandmother, my mother's mother, Nana Shimon, lived with us, and my other granny, Granny Quine, because remember my grandfather was killed in the First World War. My grandmother had 5 children, and she, you know, no social services or what we've got today, you know. And she remarried again and had 3 more children. So, Mr. Chairman, we could be blood brothers with a name like Quine, you know. So, anyway, I remember lots of things about those days. I can remember 43 and 44, 1943 and 44. And the strangest things, remember Duke Street? At the bottom of Duke Street was Clucas's, the Kipper Yard. And there would be lots of Scottish ladies there, cutting the hair and placing them on the racks. Now you can imagine 2 little boys, me and my oldest brother, would pop down to see the girls. And of course, the men would either be at sea or they'd be at the war. So 2 little boys, we were just smothered with kisses and love and bribed with a little toy cigarettes. couldn't get down there often enough. And I've had a lifetime commitment to Scottish ladies in rubber pennies. So, I'm confessing it all, you've heard it here. You've heard it here. So I've got that wonderful experience of always being loved wherever I went. You know, I was, it was smashing. And so that was that. I might as well get these confessions out of the way early on, because the other thing that I always remember was getting bathed on a Saturday night. Not a pretty sight, now, I'm sorry, but me and my brother were bathed in a tin bath in front of the fire. Not in number 10, but in the granny's house on the other side, Granny Klein's. And mother must have had a strong arm, because I can always remember, all the hot water, of course, didn't come from taps, it came from a big kettle. And brother was one end, I was the other, and the water went in the middle when you needed it heating up, you know, so she had a good strong arm and a good aim. And afterwards, this is the point though, it wasn't the bath so much, it was the joy of getting a big Turkish towel, which was warm, wrapped in that. Oldest brother on my mother's knee, me on my granny's knee. So a warm Turkish towel and getting rubbed down with that after a bath is another of my delights. So ladies, I'm waiting. And if you feel inclined, anytime you've got a Turkish towel in your hand, I'm your man, right? So those were bath times. And my granny, the house, and I've got a photograph of the house, you very kindly let me in, and I had scones. And the place, believe it or not, still retains its magic. When you went in, you had to stoop to get in, got in. Only one room downstairs, really. And there was a grandfather clock going tick-tock, tick-tock. And then another clock on the mantelpiece going tick-tock, tick-tock. It was like music. And on the fire, which always glowed, lots of slack on it, was this kettle. It was always singing. I don't know, it was magic, really. I mean, if you wanted a cup of tea, all you had to do was pull it out over, put the poker in, give it a stir, flames were up. You had it quicker than an electric kettle. It's a fact. And so I can remember the smell and the feel of that building as if it was yesterday. And when I went in 5 years ago, it was immediate. It wrapped itself around me. A bit like Peel, it wraps itself around you. So I've got magical moments of Granny Quine's house. I remember my granny dying. And the other nice thing, well, nice in the sense that I can remember these things, and it was pleasure. For an example, I'm back to my baths again. The boys were farmed out to neighbours while Mother Luke got the funeral arrangements ready. And we were at the top of the street, and it was the first house I'd ever been in that had a proper bath. And a white enamel, not, what do they call it now, not boarded up, it was standing on its legs, but it was a bath. Huge, you can imagine. Come on, have a bath. Well, I'll tell you what I felt like. I felt like a tadpole that had been in a jam jar and had suddenly been released into a pond. Because it was an experience, you know, to be in this bath and to be almost swim up to the other end. It was terrific, absolutely terrific. And back to the funeral. And I can remember distinctly my granny's funeral. And they brought them out in the coffin. Ladies didn't go to the churchyard. They had a little two kitchen chairs outside the door, and they had a hymn and a little prayer, and the lads then would put it on the coffin and carry it up to the top of the road, and then they'd go up to church, and the ladies would get the sandwiches and the tea ready. I remember that as if it was yesterday. No, it was amazing, really. And when you think of it, here am I, a child of four. A different world, of course, not the traffic that there is now. The pace of life was different. There was a war on, lots of the men were away. But Peel was a lovely place to grow up in, I tell you. We used to come here to Sunday school every Sunday, from 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, down home to Duke Street. Mother was a wonderful cake maker, you know, pastry cakes and egg custards. And I used to always have a slice of sultana cake. That's why I've got the trouble I've got now, you know, but a slice of sultana cake. Then down onto the promenade with the Salvation Army. And I can remember the leader of the Salvation Army was a Mr. Quirk. Am I right? I'm certain. Billy the Tweet, we used to call him. I'm being disrespectful here, but because you were not in those days ever allowed to call anybody other by Mr. or Mrs. You know, you were never allowed to be familiar and call them by their first name. We called him Billy the Tweet. I think he played. I think he played the tuba or one of the instruments in the band. But the Salvation Army and the chapel has got a lot to answer for me. The other thing though I can remember quite distinctly at that time was going to the pictures. Remember, you had a picture house. You've got a picture house now, haven't you? Across the road. Yeah. That across the road was good. I came here to a meeting. I've got a photograph here. Somebody will be able to tell me who the people are that's on the photograph. Well, in the paper, actually. I went to a public meeting here. This is after I'd been elected into the House of Keys. They wanted to put a pound on everybody that was living at home in council houses who'd places packed to the gunnels. And I always remember it was Mr. Ian Anderson who was the chairman of the local government board at the time, and he went in. And as soon as I walked into that hall, it was before it was done up, like, I went into the hall. Instantly, 1944 came to me. My oldest sister, Hilda, sang at a concert, a Christmas concert in 19... And I was there at this concert. As soon as I walked through the door, I could hear my sister singing, "I'll be with you in apple blossom time." Hands up all of those that can remember, "I'll be with you in apple blossom time." I can. Anyway, and I'm being me, I just tell it as it is. You know, what I think, I say. Tim will tell you that. I do it regularly in the Keys, don't I? In Tim will. Anyway, I got up and I said, "Oh, before I start, I said, I just want to tell you, I've had one of these premonitions. I'm back in," and of course, Ian didn't stand a chance after that, did he? Never did introduce the pound. So, across the road, and of course, I'm delighted. I was chairman of the Arts Council when we were able to assist the renovation of that hall. Gosh, you should be proud of that. I think it's wonderful. I really do think that's what I would call, what do they call it, recycling old lamps for new. That's got a new lease of life, and it's terrific. I think it's marvellous. So there you are. Just what we needed was the willing people to do it, and that's, again, the spirit of this particular town. And don't let them sanitise you. Don't let them say old is bad, new is good. I think we can marry the two. You know, you've still got to have the heart in the place. And exactly. And don't let them, I use the word sanitise. They've tried ever since I went into Timwood to sanitise me. They have failed lamentably up to now, you know. I even refused to wear my top hat on Timwood Day. Now that is revolutionary, believe you me. Anyway, can I come to Peel and the playground that I had, which was the promenade. It was an old play, of course, because we go along the prom and to the Weatherglass corner. Oh, while I'm on the lecturing bit here to you, don't you ever let them pull that corner down. I mean, it's the affairs of the world are discussed, or used to be discussed. I don't know whether they do it now. You know, and as far as I'm concerned, you know, that's, don't let that. And are you on the highway board, Tim?
Used to be.
Don't you let them put a roundabout there, boy. The temptation will be, oh well, we could have a lovely roundabout there and speed traffic up. No, you don't. Just leave it as it is. But my recollection of the harbour is fishing boats, wall to wall. You could actually, at some times of the season, walk on the decks of those ships, or the boats, all the way across the harbour. I know those days are gone. But, you know, these are my recollections. And they used to bring the heron up in a wicker basket. And they used to bring them up and then swing it over and into the barrels and then bring them to the yards to be kippered and salted. And when they were swinging them over, of course, odd herons would slide off. And I'd be hiding behind that little wall just, you know, where they came. Oh, they've built another wall, haven't they? In a world where walls are coming down, it could only happen in Peel that they're putting walls up. Enough of that. I mustn't be controversial. And so I used to hide behind the wall, and then there'd be a rush between me and the seagulls to get them spare heron, you know, get them on a string. I'd do that most of the morning, and then you'd see us walking to St. John's. Uncle Stan and Auntie Winnie at St. John's used to have a croc. They don't have them now, do they? For putting salt heron down. And they always used to stay at the back door, and there was a sort of a lid over it, and they, you know, I mean, health and safety wouldn't let us do that now, would they? You know, it would be wrong for you, you know. But it does us no harm at all. Anyway, that was part of my life. I'm coming to the harbour now, and the Gilpin. Come on, will somebody tell me whatever has happened to the Gilpin? What a Gilpin. The little fish, there used to be shoals of little fish in the harbour coming in and out with the tide. And we used to fish for them up the steps. Now, I can remember getting a hook in my finger. Not advisable, but I did. I got a hook in my finger. And it was Dr. Poyser. Is it Dr. Poyser? No, it's Dr. Poyser. And the wonders of science. They gave me, is it ether or something, you know, to make you dizzy. Because I was squawking. One thing I've never left. I'm a coward. I'm an openly admitted coward, you know. Big yellow streak running right down my back when it comes to pain, I know. And I had this hook in my finger, and I was brought up to the doctor, Dr. Poyser. They give me a whip of this, and they don't take the hook back out over the barb. They sort of feed it through, don't they? You know, they take the barb and they take it the other way, so right through. Anyway, I got this finger. I got a lathering when I got home, because it was a Sunday afternoon and I should have been on the prom with Billy the Tweet, instead of which I was at the thing fishing for Gilpin. So, and the last story about the Gilpin, I just mentioned it to the chairman before, was I must have been responsible for Granny Shimon having a very short life, because there must have been an artistic streak in me somewhere, because even the cats wouldn't eat Gilpin, you know, a little fish like this, and the cat wouldn't even eat them. Brought them home, what do I do with this couple of dozen fish I had? So I went to the five egg and arranged them in a very artistic way around the seat. Now, Grandma Shimon, of course, was one of these old ladies. She had a skirt right down to her ankles and lace boots. And of course, when she went, and part of the evening, of course, was spent by the ladies. We didn't have what's that advert for the with the little puppy that you know, and Rex, it goes forever and ever and ever. Half of the evening, no television, only the posh had a radio, and they would cut squares out of the newspapers and put strings around for the loo. That was part of the evening entertainment. It's a bit like lighting a fire. You always find the good bits, don't you? That you miss first time round when you're screwing them up to put them on the fire. But anyway, they had the... So my granny, of course, was going into the loo, and she went backwards, of course, didn't loop, sat down. I can still hear the screams. And I decided it would be better if Lowy left home, so I abandoned the ship for 4 hours. Granny forgive me by the way, but I don't think my mother ever did. But anyway, that's the Gilpin story. The Gilpin. You know, it's... And the other thing I remember about the harbour, there was always boats coming in, little boats, flukers. Hands up those who remember the flukers. No, little boats brought crabs in and skate. You'd never see skate now in a fishmonger's, do you? Maybe you do in Peel, come on. Tell me you do. No? But skate, and there used to be whoppers caught just up the north here. My old man used to say, you know, my father, of course, was a great fisherman, and the late Hazel, help me out, who's our chaplain?
Oh, Eddie
Cubbin. Eddie. How can you forget Eddie? I can remember him here. Taking a mariner's service. Nobody slept when Eddie was on, was I? Brilliant man, Eddie. Absolutely wonderful man. I could keep you going all night with stories about Eddie. But Eddie went fishing with my father. I didn't know that. First day in, he said, hey, Lowy, he said, you know, I went fishing with your father. Apparently all the boys used to love to go fishing, and they all wanted to go with my father, because the carve-up, I think, used to be 50% for the captain, or the mass of the boat, and the other 50% was split between the other two members. And the boy, they always had a 14-year-old or 13-year-old boy going out with them, and they got 5 bob or 10 bob. My father's boat was different. It was 40% for him, 10% for running the boat, and the other 50% split three ways. The boy got the same. So Eddie said, they all wanted to go to sea with your father, and he chose me. And he went, he said, and regularly, he said, he went round the corner of Peel Castle. Now, it didn't matter whether all the boats, the fleet were going up that way, and your father went that way. They'd come back with nothing. Your father never went out and didn't come back without a haul. He was a brilliant fisherman, apparently, my father. So Eddie said, regularly, your father would say, get up on deck at the Peel Hill and say a prayer for us, Eddie. He said, and I used to pray like I've never prayed before or since in my life, because your father would be as full as a coop. And he said, I was praying for myself that I would get back. But Eddie Cubbon was a brilliant man and told me loads of stories, fisherman stories, and of the way the town worked in his day. Smashing man, and again, a great influence on me, and a terrific fella. Anyway, there you are. Now I'm just coming up the hill, just up the harbour a bit. And I remember, I said the place and style of life here in Peel was different than it is today. And it was, of course, because the centre of the town, the city, was the railway station. Because, that, you know, most transport was in and out by rail. Very little road traffic, really. But the main was railway. And running along the railway, there was the blackboards. Remember? Remember them? And I can remember somebody coming off and falling in. And somebody came out of the creek and ran down the slipway. But the thing of this story is, this fella floated, this child actually floated. He never sank. Well, you know, when you go swimming, one of irony, life's ironies really, isn't it? When you learn to swim, you sink like a stone. And when you've learned to swim and you think, oh, go posh now and do a bit of snorkeling, you keep bobbing to the top. Now, it should be the other way around, shouldn't it? But this fella was floating, and I couldn't believe it, you know, that this fella was floating. Apparently, he had that many clothes on, that's why he didn't sink. But you know what I mean? I can't remember that. But I remember the incident. I can remember the incident quite well. And when we're in bed, me and my brother talking, I said, he's floating, how is that? And he said to me, Dr. Poyser, give you, because they called for Dr. Poyser, of course, because to make sure he's okay. And he said, Dr. Poyser gives you a needle, and whatever's in that needle is like air, it pumps in it and you can float. I was about 10 years of age before I was disabused that you got a needle and you could float. So you see, I was easily influenced. So the harbour is lovely. Now can I come to one of the places which I regret seeing gone, and that is the Viking Longhouse. Now, I know you've got £1 million flats and they're all done up nice. But you know that building was responsible for the best adverts. You know, nowadays we talk about spending thousands of pounds on advertising, you know, the heart and the soul and the magic of the Isle of Man. And Hazel can verify this. The best advert the Isle of Man had when we had visitors, international visitors, parliamentarians from all over the world, was a night out at the Longhouse. They loved it. They couldn't get enough of it. Put a sheepskin round their shoulders, a pair of horns on their head. And who was the man that we used to do the Viking thing? He was always at Tynwald. You've got him. Brilliant fella. Brilliant fella. But what we used to do, we'd get somebody, usually an African lad, and we'd say, you're the king of the Vikings. Well, I mean, he was the king of the Vikings. He would go home, and years later, you'd meet these people, and all they could talk about wasn't our constitution or anything else, but Peel, the night they were made king of the Vikings. It was wonderful. But better than that, and of course, it was simple fare. You know, they were well fed and well entertained when they were here. But what the magic for me was the people who used to, and I met three super girls, and they were related to, well, mother knew them, of course, but I've got the Margaret Hughes, Gladys Brew, and May Tier. Can you think of three other women? Oh, well, I tell you, Margaret and Gladys used to wait down all over the island, you know. And I used to, when I used to attend these the official functions and all, the first thing I'd say to Margaret is, what you did as kids when you came in at lunchtime? We always had dinner in the middle of the day. I don't know what you do now in Peel, you know, but we always had our dinner in the middle of the day, and we always had a pudding as well. So the first thing we'd ask when we come in was, what's for pudding? Not what's for dinner, what's for pudding? And whenever I went to these official functions, I used to, the first thing I'd say to Margaret and Gladys was, what's for pudding? And it came so, the first thing they would say to me at the end when they came in, I'll tell you what you're having for pudding, Eddie, you know, straight away. People would look and it was an in-joke between us Peelites. But they were marvellous people. The last time I was at the Viking, they came up to me, Gladys, and you know what Gladys was like? My God, what a girl. And she came up to me at the end and she said, the bikes are out outside, Eddie, are you ready? And I used to play me part, of course. I said, of course I'm ready. Always ready for you, Gladys. Where are we going? She said, to the Ragged, to do some scrumping, you know, pinching apples. And I thought, played the part. And I said to the fellas, well, you'll have to see me tomorrow. I'm going out with the girls. They got the bikes ready. And they genuinely believed that I went scrumping with Gladys up to the back. Only get away with simple, harmless fun. But, you know, they were the salt of the earth, them girls. And, you know, what makes Peel tick? People like Gladys, people like May Tia. That's who makes them tick. Now, I told you, oh, Sundays. By gum, and back to me grannies. On a Saturday night, I don't know how many of you remember these, we used to put dried peas into, you know, didn't you put soda or something in the water? You did very little on a Sunday. I mean, it just was not done in those days. On a Saturday night, you'd be chopping cabbage up, peeling spuds, putting the rice in to soak. I remember one night, because I put the soda in with the rice, and we didn't have any pudding that day, I'll tell you. But, you know, old jobs like that, and you always were encouraged to do things, you know, chop the mint or whatever it was, go out the garden, pick the mint, bring it in, chop it up, you know, and in return, you got to scrape the enamel dish which the rice pudding would be done. No, the burnt bit round the edge. What a treat, eh? And the other mystery to me is, even in the wartime, me mother used to get nutmeg from somewhere. And it used to be grated and put on. I wasn't over keen on that. Fancy. You know, I'm a plain, I like me rice pudding to be rice pudding, you know. But there you are. And so those are the sort of things that I remember, you know, as a kid. And they've stayed with me ever since, really. I have then to say that, you know, where are we? I've said about St. John's and going up there. Oh, aye. If the tide was out, how did you get across the harbour? You went on the ferry, didn't you? A penny to get across on the rowing boat. Remember? And I remember coming home one day, and the lad who was running the ferry must have took pity on me, and I thought, right, well, you know, I didn't have a penny to go on, but I wanted to get across the other side. No penny, or you'll have to stay on the boat, I'll have to take you back. I got a shilling's worth each way. I thought I'd been on a world cruise by the time I'd been backwards and forwards along that thing. And when the tide was out, you used to go on planks, didn't you? Remember? God, health and safety wouldn't let you do that now, would they? Last year, I had the privilege of welcoming home the president of the North American Manx Association. And they're related to the Corrins of Corrins Folly. And they wanted, they've been friends of mine since the 1980s, and a terrific family, and she was president. And I said I would go there the year that she was made president. Anyway, it was last year, so I went off there. No, the year before, I went to Minnesota, where they live, and they held the World Manx Conference, the North American Conference there. And she, of course, the president is for 2 years, so she came home to the Isle of Man. And, of course, she wanted to visit Corran's Folly because that's where the relationship comes in. I will tell you, we're amongst friends, and I know you won't go. You haven't got metal detectors, have you? We buried some silver special dollars that were family heirlooms up around the tower, so I don't expect to see you with a mine detector, but they're up there. Anyway, we went up there last year. Strange story, really. We started out the day before. We went to Patrick Church because that's where one of our relations was married. And the strange thing is that my mother was married in Patrick Church. So we stayed a little longer in Patrick Church than we planned. So we missed out on Peel Hill. So it was the day after we went. And Gillian and I, by the way, that's Gillian at the back. She's the baby of the family. She's not a Gothic. She's a Balasalarite, you know. She was born in the Nissen huts in Balasala. But we'll forgive you for that, Jill. And we'd done a sus the week before, and I just about got over. I did have to have oxygen when I came back down, but we got up, and they'd had it open, so we actually got to the very top of the tower. And if you haven't been to the top of the tower, it's fabulous. It's absolutely fantastic, the views and the history. So the day after we went, it was perfect. The sun shone, the butterflies were out. When we went up the week before, Gillian had got a thing about ladybirds, isn't it, Gillian? I'm not only confessing my fetishes, I'm giving yours away now, aren't I? She loves ladybirds, and summer isn't here unless she's got ladybirds. We go for a walk in Port St. Mary, she doesn't look at the views, all she's looking for is ladybirds. Langness, doesn't matter about the footpaths, it's getting the ladybirds. Peel Hill was the same. We got up there that particular day, after Timbal Day, it would be at the 7th or 8th of January of July, and it was just perfect. I can't tell you how perfect a day it was, and I was so proud of it because I'd never seen Peel looking better. The heather was just blushing through there, you know, it was just a hint of purple, and the breeze was blowing. It was just absolutely perfect, and I thought, absolutely marvellous, except for two things, and I was responsible for one of them. And that was the Peel Power Station. I signed the form to the Lowther to be built. And it's learnt me one lesson. It's learnt me one lesson. Never agree to plans unless you've got a 3D thing, not on a flat piece of paper. Whenever I go up to Slewellyan, that's me. If ever you want to see Eddie when he's had a bad time, go up to the top of Slewellyan. I'm sitting on I call it me Wailing Rock. I sit on the top there and I can have a good scriss, or I can have a good laugh, or I can clear my mind. I'll sit up there. But every time I walk up, what sticks out like a sore thumb? Our chimney. Or as we say in Peel, chimney. Our chimney sticks up. And I was responsible for that. No one else to blame but me. And the other thing, I still haven't come to terms with it, Tim. You're all in favour of it, I know, but the regeneration of the harbour. My thing is still out on that. I don't know whether I like all the yachts in nice, neat rows. And I know the days of the boats have gone, but I still haven't made my mind up yet whether I... You've still got to leave a little room for the flukers of tomorrow to be able to come in and throw the crabs up, you know. Don't, again, get the price of everything and leave the values, the true values of what a harbour should be. Now I come to the influences of Peel. That's the sort of thing that made the foundations for me. But I come to what the influence in Peel. Did you know when I first went into Peel, into Thimble, the Peel Mafia were very strong. There was that many garbage, you were tripping over them. There was Roy MacDonald, there was Betty Boot, Betty Quirk. That's, you know, Betty Hansen, better known as, I suppose, really. But Roy called her Betty Boo, so I called her Betty Boo. But nice, and I like Betty, I really did. Betty Boo, Arnold Callan, all Govics. His Honour William Kane, Govics. But the real man that may had a real influence, the first board I went on was the Harbour Board. And who was the chairman of the Harbour Board? Roy MacDonald. And Roy was terrific to me. He really did, if you like, immerse me into Manx politics. I have an awful lot to be grateful for to Roy MacDonald. He was a terrific fella, he really was. And then later on, along came Hazel Hannan, and I was chairman of the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association for a long time. I succeeded Jack Niverson, and I must have been nearly 20 years chairman of the local branch, and it opened a whole terrific, it really is. I've been a very, very lucky person, you know, in my life, I really have. But I was chairman of that, and I decided to give it up. Not that the members threw me out. I decided to resign because I was having such a wonderful time. This is the nonconformist in me coming out. Why should it always be me that was having this good time? So I stepped down for somebody else to have a go, and Hazel became the chairman. And I can tell you, in her term of office, it was terrific. She put a new dimension to it. She had a new vision to it. Two little stories, antidotes I'm going to tell you about Hazel. I was in Trinidad with her. She's putting her head down now. We're in Trinidad, and the opening speech by the Prime Minister, who was a bit of a rogue, by the way, he really was, Mr. Pandey. And in his opening speech, he had about five people in death row, and he was bragging that he was going to sign the death warrants and all the rest of it. And, you know, it didn't go down well with me. It went down even less with Hazel. And one of them things, the first reception we had was up at the Prime Minister's official residence, posh house on a hill. Sometimes you've got to be first. You know when you go on a plane, one day your case is going to come off that carousel first. It's never happened to me yet, but it, you know, one, the law of averages, it's got to happen someday. Well, this particular time, our coach arrived first. And who was out first? Hazel and me. So we were first at the gates, and who was there to meet us? The Prime Minister. And Mr. Pandey came up and said, hello. And Hazel said, hello, Prime Minister. Can I say how much I totally disagree with you? She gave him seven rounds of the kitchen. Bang, bang, bang. Because, good girl, Hazel. I was proud as punch. The other story, she's not going to like me for saying it, but we were in Namibia in 2001, and Hazel had been nominated to be the chairman of the whole shebang. And the competition was quite fierce, and it's like all international affairs, a lot of the voting was already predetermined by region and what have you. So, but anyway, Hazel's name was, she was shortlisted on the floor, and they had to address the 700 people that were at the conference. I have never heard a Manx politician speak better. And Hazel knows, I said this to her at the time, and I said it when I came home. I've never heard a Manx politician give a better speech in my life. She made me feel 10 feet tall and made me proud to be Manx. You'd have all been proud of her. It was a terrific performance. No, she didn't win the speech, but she won the debate. She won the hearts and minds of the people that were in the room. But they still voted the way that they'd already said they were going to vote. But it was terrific. And so therefore, Peel has got a reputation. Now we've got young Tim in, and he's making a bit of a reputation for himself, jumping up and down and working hard. And if you want to complain about the water, you go and see that man. And it's all now in what infrastructure, I think, is what you're involved in now, isn't it, son? Next week it'll be infrastructure. So, no, I'm trying to say that my life was built on foundations that were solid, as far as I'm concerned. They were the right foundations, here in the chapel. And I laughingly said, you know, the chapel and the Salvation Army shaped me, but it did. You can't get that away. And the other thing I can remember about that, we used to have joint, you know, they have a word now for it. I can't get my tongue around it. You, when the churches all come together, what's that called? Come on, Hazel. Yeah, ecumenical. You've got it. That's right. I always was told by my English maths, if you can't spell it, you can't use it. I think I could just about spell that, really. But anyway, we practiced it here in Peel in the 1940s, early 1940s, because you used to have joint picnics. I remember getting on the train and going to St. John's, and then from St. John's to Glenwillan, just up the road. But it might as well have been another planet. You know, we were going on a picnic You know, and that we did things like that in Peel. I suppose it was part of the war, if you look at it in that way. But we used to do things together, and that's what Peel is still noted for, doing things. 2 years ago, I had the privilege of opening the school extension at the Peel Cloth Workers. That was the first school I ever went to. How times have changed. Me and my oldest brother used to be, we had a dog called Lassie, and my mother used to call Lassie at about 10 to 9. Lassie would come, she'd put my hand on one side of the collar and Robert's hand on the other and say to the dog, "School." And Lassie used to walk us to school. Now, I am quite sure today that would be rather frowned upon, you know. But in those days, it was perfectly safe to do that sort of thing. I can remember that quite distinctly, the dog walking us to school. As I say, 2 years ago, I had the privilege of going to that school to open a new extension. And my nephew's boys had been to the school and had a lovely time, and they're 14 now, and they're at QE2. And that was a fabulous, they're having a wonderful time, they love their school, and they're doing great. And they just love Peel. The reason I would say that I had the privilege of opening that school was because I had to say to the kids why I thought Peel was a special place. And I did actually have a prepared speech for them. And this is what I told the children. Peel was and is a wonderful place to grow up in. What makes Peel special? Firstly, the people. You've got a wonderful athletics club. You've got a reasonable football team. Sorry about that, Hazel. You've got a marvellous golf course. So you see, you've got all the ingredients there. You've got the museums. You've got the car museum. You've got the lease museum. You've got the wonderful entertainment centre across the road, the Arts Centre in Athol Street, created by local people, for local people, and everything from pantomime to classical jazz. It's not Catholic in your tastes. You're wonderful. Yeah, I read in the paper what you're doing, and it's terrific. Then you've got, of course, the natural. You've got the River Neb, you've got the castle, you've got the sunsets, you've got the fishing. You know, of Peel Breakwater, you know. You've now got the added attractions of the seals coming in and entertaining. Have you ever been out watching them? Yes. I love the fishermen's look on their face when they think, oh, I've got a mackerel here. And then a seal comes up and you had a mackerel here. You know, there's a head left on the line. You never had them when I was there. But, you know, it's terrific. And then you've got the sharks at the back. Where else would you get that all encompassed in one little place? No wonder that more and more people are wanting to come to live to Peel. But it'll be important that you look after the heart and soul of this place. It really is. I said it was a special day for me that day because my sister, my late sister Barbara, who was born in Peel, came with me on that occasion. It was her birthday. We did it on the 23rd of April. And a year later, on her birthday, Barbara left us. She died on her birthday a year later. And I look back and I think to myself, when we come home, I had to use Semtex to get her out, like, you know. She was with the kids. They'd sang happy birthday to her. They'd given her a big bunch of flowers. She'd got sitting in the middle amongst all of them. And you know what they're like. You just couldn't prize them apart. But I did do. And when we were coming away, she said, "That's the best birthday present I've ever had in my life. All those kids singing to me and talking to me like they did." And that was terrific. And to think a year later that she'd gone. And she was a Peel girl. Now, I recited that little story at a funeral. And the people of Peel that, you know, were as one, really, you know. I said at the start, you can't wash it out of you. You can't. You really can't. Now, they call that sentimentality. I don't. I think it's called roots and empathy. And as I say, you know, what better foundation is there for anybody? I've got a story to tell. I'm not going to tell you tonight. But I've got photographs of people I've been privileged to meet through the job I have. I went to Ballasalla and I developed. And I stood for the keys and all the rest is history, as you know. But I've had a career that has made me meet people that I hadn't really, I have no right to have expected to have met, and Hazel knows lots of them. I mean, to dine with Nelson Mandela, to host the Queen to lunch, to, you know, I could rattle them all off. One lady, which I'm particularly fond of, and that was Winifred Bramwell Booth. Winifred was the great-granddaughter of the founder of the Salvation Army. She was 94, and I was chairman of the Overseas Aid Committee, and we'd given them some Land Rovers for leprosy work in India, and we went down to give her the keys for these Land Rovers. And we had a wonderful time. First time I ever met John Major. And he was all right, John Major, nothing wrong with him. But I can't remember him, but I can remember Winifred. What a funny woman. 94. And I said to her after lunch, I said, Winifred, I said, you've got to stop it. And she said, what's that, Eddie? And I said, you're in danger of giving religion a good name, and I'm not having it. She roared. And it was terrific. You know, I've had the privilege of meeting these people. And all because, if you like, of, you know, I was in the right place at the right time. But I wouldn't be me if I hadn't been born in Peel and had the foundations that I've tried to explain to you today. Now, you're telling me you're blowing the whistle on me. I haven't started on page two yet.
No. We wondered if you want a cup of tea now.
I would love a cup of tea now. These poor souls here are the ones that want nourishment.
I'm not killing it.
Yes.
When we come back, it's after the watershed.
Ah, you're right.
So we expect the more colourful stories after.
Later, all right. There's some photos here. Come and have a look at the photos with a cup of tea. There you are. There's a photograph of me. I was 16 once, you know. I had hair. Hazel's mother, by the way, used to play whist with me, Mrs. Taubman. And she used to sign her whist drive things, IT. So I would say, the winner tonight is it. I haven't told them. But it was it. So, you know, again, I could keep you going for hours. But anyway, you know, let's have a look at some of the photographs. Let's have a cup of tea, okay?
The first half, I think you'll agree, was very, very interesting. And now we get the real nitty-gritty. So,
I don't know about the nitty-gritty. I wouldn't say this. I was actually mentioned in dispatches in The Guardian. And the date of The Guardian is Monday, July the 5th, 1976. And there's a photograph of a fine lot of people. First year I was in, we had a well-known lady. Mimi, remember Mimi? The Marchioness of Queens. And she lived in the Hacienda on the Peel Road. And I always remember Roy saying to me, no, I can't say it, I'm in church. The lady, didn't quite use that word, I don't think. Well, I can't think of the Maxfield either. But the lady has stopped us walking on to Strand Beach or something on the one. Oh no, he said, she's not going to do that. And so we had a protest. And he said, you come? And I said, you bet. And I expected about a dozen people got there. Typical Peel, half a Peel was there. You seem to be inviting many people. So, like being a politician, you've got to have a yarn, don't you? And you've got that in a captive audience. So, Roy got up on the hedge and said a few words. And then, I'm standing there looking innocent. And he said, and I've got to introduce you to another Peel man, Mr. Larry, who's, you know, just got elected, blah, blah, blah. Get up there, Eddie, and tell us what you think. Well, I did. You know, when you're standing on the hedge and you've got 500 people there in front of you, you know, you've got to say something. So I said things, and by gum, I got a roaring welcome back to Peel, you know. Couldn't go wrong then, you know, the Marchioness. And by the way, we did play by the Queensbury rules, and we did get our mark. I mean, I walk there quite regularly, just for the spite of it, you know. I thought, I'm not letting the brambles grow too much, you know. I make a beeline at least once a year down that path. But this is a photograph of, and I know Lewis. God, he was a good man too, Lewis Crellin. And I don't know who the others are. There's two good-looking women are. Tell me who they are.
Well, we think that's Dorothy Moore, and that's Ernest Cowley, but we don't know who that is.
We don't know who that is.
We can't really work out who that is. I don't know. man or a woman to play Clement. That's Lewis Clement, yes. Yeah. That's Ernest Cowley.
Yeah.
And that's Dorothy Moore, but I don't know who those two are.
Three out of five isn't bad, is it? Anyway, all the night is out, I'll find out. Anyway, it comes back to Peel. So my, as I said, Roy, I'll give you a little story, and it means nothing really to people nowadays because everything is just taken as it's always been. But Roy, Edgar Mann and I were on the harbour board, and Roy had this thing in his bonnet about, you know, the Manx, the fishing and our traditions. We should be leading the world, we should have our own flag, we should have our own fleet. And we got talking after the meeting, and he said, I'm going to get William Kane down here and see what we can do about getting our own shipping register. Well, William Kane down, he was the Attorney General then, and he said, it's impossible, Roy. You'd need to change all the legislation. And he said, there must be a dozen acts, he said, you had to introduce. Roy said, we made the bleeding things, I think that's what he said, but that's what we meant, the bleeding things. And he said, we can unmake them, we can make them, we'll do it. And then we set off to do it. And we actually brought in 15 acts in, less than 18 months. I remember, because I took 9 of them through the Keys, because Edgar Mann, of course, was a practicing physician then, a doctor in Peel. So in Lassie. And I thought, I know, it's not unfair of Edgar having to do that. So I did the bulk in the Keys. But Roy done the whole lot, 100% of them. But we got the thing through. And of course, the shipping register, which is so vital to us today, which, you know, is bringing us in loads of money and gives us it's a quality business. You know, we don't deal in rust buckets, we deal in quality shipping, and Roy insisted on that. And so, you know, when you think of it, Roy was way ahead of his time and was never given acknowledgement for that. Other people claimed that they sort of invented it, everyone from David North to, I better not say that. He's still with us, you know. He's still with us. No, so I, you know, I come to the point where really, you know, I said at the end, I was a very fortunate politician. I suppose I came in when the old boys were all going out, and they didn't plan their succession. So the Russian benches, all three of us were quite young from 1976 or 77, whenever the election was then, and Miles and Noel and I came in. But we were like three little, you know, youngsters with all these old boys, you know, Norman Crowe and Sir John Bolton. But they were good because we learned our trade from them. You know, I always take John Bolton on. When you think of the arrogance of it, you know, the arrogance. A Govig, a Peel fella, taking on John Bolton, who was, you know, the god of, you know, all the fount of wisdom, and, you know, couldn't do anything wrong. I regularly used to tackle him, you know. And but anyway, I was very fortunate. As I said, I've had a very varied career. I was a minister, and who wants to be a minister? You've had it, I tell you. Do I miss the papers? No, I don't. And they're all, don't be in a rush to be one, Tim. just take your time, son, it'll come. But when you get there, you'll wonder, well, what all I've been fighting for, you know. But it's very interesting, and, you know, from home affairs to trade and industry. Trade and industry was brilliant. I enjoyed the challenge of creating work and opportunities and making things happen, and that was wonderful. But it did give me the opportunity of meeting people. And let me just give you one or two of the people that I've met. And it's through the work that I've met them. And some that I met before that. I mean, let me give you the first one. I've only about three people in my life where my hair, you know, when I had hair, stood up on the back of my neck. You know that sensation. One was when I met Mandela. I mean, he was a most remarkable man. But that was through my work. I was on the executive of the CPA at the time. And we were in South Africa and we had lunch with him. And I was telling the chairman beforehand, we were in this ante room waiting for the great man to come in. And
Mary was serving as refreshments. Mary was a big, big lady. You could warm your hands on the on a smile, you know. And I discovered she was her first day at work in government buildings. And so I said to Mary, oh, you'll have seen the president. No, it's my first day. I've only ever seen him on the television. I'm so excited. I said, don't worry, Mary. I said, I'll introduce you to the great man. Promises made, promises have to be kept. So anyway, came round. First of all, let me tell you my impressions of Mandela. He's much taller than you see him on the television. No, he's a bit taller man. He, although he'd been in prison for, what, 28, 32 years, and they always say that you, when you're in an institution like that, you get a stoop, you know, you're institutionalised. This is not a bit. He was as straight as a die, looked you straight in the eye, and believe it or believe it not, he must have been well-briefed, because he spent half a minute with everybody in the room. There's 28 of us. And between you and me, come to me, I was introduced as Eddie Lowe from the Isle of Man. He knew all about the TT races. He knew all about the finance sector, that we ran a very profitable finance sector. So he'd been well briefed. Anyway, cutting a long story short, by this time my hair was tingling the back of my neck. And I thought, well, in for a penny, in for a pound. And I said, Your Excellency, I said, can I break with protocol? I said, there's a young lady at the back of me. I said, it's the first day working in government buildings. Great admirer of yours. And I think you'd make her day, year, if you could just say hello to her. No problem at all. Straight up, hello, Mary, I believe you. I didn't believe in levitation till that minute. She was that high off the ground. And I can deal with ladies as a rule. I couldn't deal with Mary afterwards because she was crying. And when I say crying, she wasn't crying little tears. They were coming out like waterfalls. Now, what do you do with a lady that's got waterfalls coming out? It's very hard. But she was still levitating, by the way. She was still, I think she'd still be levitating to this day, really. But a terrific, you know, I mean, what a, and the lovely way he finished the conversation, because, you know, time is precious to them. He said, keep your eye on him, Mary. He's from the Isle of Man. And then just drifted away. And I thought, marvellous to the next. Wonderful. He was a wonderful man. Another lady that I met through my work was Mother Teresa of Calcutta. Another icon, really. The very opposite to Mandela. She's even tinier than you thought. But I've never seen such sparkling sapphire blue eyes on anybody in my life. They actually were like diamonds. I'll come to that in a minute about sparkling things. But her eyes were so sparkling, and she was on the go. She was electric. Again, my hair stood on end. And the other person had nothing to do with work. I had a friend, I was in a boarding house living in London for 6 months, sugar beet days, you know, and I was under 21, and therefore I wasn't allowed, when I came back, I wasn't going to be employed on the government scheme, so I stayed away. I went native, really. I got the wanderlust. And when I went, left Essex from the shore, I went to the Isle of Wight, one island to another, you know. Anyway, a friend of mine, his mother ran a boarding house in the Barbican in London, so I thought I'd go to the big smoke and discover and get me fortune. So I went there, and anyway, he was in love with this particular girl. She ditched him, as you do. There's no happy endings, are there, really? He ditched him. He was suicidal. He was Italian. What can you expect? And anyway, he bought two tickets for the opera and said to the girl, would you like to come with me to the opera? And she said, you bet. This is the girlfriend. He just ditched him. Well, he read into that. Romance was back in the air. Spring was in the air. Happy days here again. And she came to me and she said, tell him, Eddie, it's nothing like that. I just want to go with him because I want to go to the opera to see Joan Sutherland. Fine. So I had the news of telling them, well, if he was suicidal before, he was doubly suicidal. And his mother said to me, on the night, you've got to take him to the opera, Eddie, you've got to. Me, take him to the opera. Anyway, you do these things when you're what, when you're 20. So anyway, I said, right, come on, we're going. I can't say we sat in the royal box, we didn't, we were up in the gods. And it's the first time I'd ever been in the opera house, in any opera house. It's the first time I'd ever been to an opera. Now, I tell you, you know, you think, a lad from Peel, at the opera, come on. It's Phantom of the Opera stuff, this, isn't it, really? But I did, and I have to tell you, Joan Sutherland was the singer.
she's an Australian soprano. She's a household name now. And I've never in all my life heard a human voice take on a 135-piece orchestra. And all you heard was the voice. You never heard the orchestra. And I can tell you, the orchestra was going 90 to the dozen, you know. But all you could hear was her singing. Absolutely amazing. Well, if that wasn't enough, we took the wrong turning coming out, because we were up in the gods. We took the wrong turning. Somehow we finished at backstage. And who should I stumble into but the diva herself, who is, and she stopped and she spoke for about a minute and a half. You know, not get out, who do you think you are, what are you doing here, you know, oh, you've been to the opera, what did you think of it, you know, Trouble's the first time. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And so from the lady who was the tambourine girl, the Winifred Bramwell Booth, to the lady in Calcutta, to Mandela, to you know, this is a dream, isn't it? Isn't this a dream from a lad that came from Peel? And you know, and why should all of this be happening to me? I don't know, really. I said I was in the right place at the right time. That's the only way I can describe it. But I come to the Isle of Man now, and you know, how lucky we are. Would you want to be anywhere else? I said goodbye to my Sunday school teacher last Tuesday, Mrs. Joyce Young, Joyce Kelly. I always call them by their maiden names. Their father was the station master. And when we went to Ballasalla in 45, we got there just before Christmas. We went to the chapel, and of course it was their Sunday school picnic, and Joyce met me and took me under her wing. She was 12. I thought she was a goddess. You know, and we've grown up together. And I said at Joyce's funeral that she was a girl that was happy living in Ballasalla all her life. She lived within 200 yards of the family home where she was born, and she wouldn't have lived anywhere else, and she wouldn't have swapped places with anyone else. Do you know, I wouldn't swap places with anyone else. I'm one of 14 kids. I never knew what it was to be hungry. I was never a fashion plate, as you can guess by tonight. Hazel threatened many times in her career to take me down to Marty's and buy me a suit. True, am I true? She's putting her head down, but it's true. Her and Pam throw between them. Regular, that was a threat, I'll tell you. That was a threat. But I was never a fashion plate. But I never knew what it was to be hungry. I never knew what it was to be without love, you know. And always, no matter what the problem was, you always had somebody to talk to. And that's very important. And I'm back to community again now. And Peel is still retaining community. You keep that community going. When I went in, we had 4,000 people, 3,000, 3,500 people unemployed. And you know, the transformation has been in the last 25 years. And we take it all for granted, you know. We do take it all for granted. We don't have the unemployment, thank goodness. We are sacrificing something in return for that. And that's why we've got to be alive to what I would call, you know, our immediate past, our roots, because it's too easy to be swamped. I've got a bill next week in the, great, isn't it, when you think of it? I'm a bachelor, and here am I taking the matrimonial, what's that bill that you've just passed, Tim? The matrimonial, and it's where you can be married anywhere now. You can be married on a hillside. The marriage bill, marriage and miscellaneous. But anyway, it means you can be married anywhere, you know, on a train, on a boat, 10,000 feet up, or at the top of a rule if you want. And I'm busy going through that bill today. And I turned the radio on. I wish I hadn't, because I listen to Manx Radio. You're paying £1 million a year for Manx Radio. And I shouldn't criticise Manx Radio, really. It's the national station. But, you know, I never do find people who just want the changes. You know, it's wrong, it's wrong, it's wrong. And I thought, hang on. If it's that wrong, how have we got where we've got? And we must have done something right some of the time to achieve what we've got. When it goes wrong, it's because of us.
If it goes right, it's in spite of us. Mm-hmm. Well, all I'm saying is, if it's gone right, I'm going to claim the benefit. If it goes wrong, on the chin and accept it. But we are in a very fortunate position here in the Isle of Man, and we shouldn't forget that. And it's too easy to be, if you like, comfortable with our position. But I do think we are losing that bit of what I would call our roots. And I'm as guilty of it as anybody, but I still, in the core of me, believe that the Manx way, it'll do. And unless we pass it on to the next generation, we're in danger of losing it altogether, much quicker than you think. So Peel Heritage Trust, you keep at it, because I think it's vitally important that you keep the heart and keep the soul in Peel. It seems as if I'm bragging about what I've done. I couldn't have done a fraction of this without the support of other people. People, as I mentioned, Roy, and I'm only mentioning these people because they have been influential. Hazel, as I said, you know, made me feel to be Manx in South Africa. And I said to you before about sparkling things. If ever you want to see stars as they should be, now, come on, girls, you know this. When it's a frosty night and you go out, the stars seem to twinkle, don't they, in the sky, if you haven't got a bit of cloud. Mind you, when we left Ballasalla tonight, it was raining, miserable. God, was it miserable. Correct, Jill?
Correct.
Got to Peel, through St. John's, a lovely night. Gillian said, look at this, 7:10 and still light. And I said, not in Ballasalla, it ain't. But over here, it is, lovely. Twinkling, sparkling eyes. Get into the middle of the Nabi Desert in Namibia and you'll see stars. There's no light pollution. But they twinkle like diamonds, you know, like stars should be. I know we have an imagination, but really, if you want to see the stars, go to Namibia. Am I right, Hazel? The stars twinkle bright in Namibia. I'll tell you one final story about that trip. When we got there, the leader... It's hard to believe that this country only got its independence in 1992. So we were there a decade after they got independence. And the deputy president, the vice president, who has been one of the leaders of the revolution, had died. So he was lying in state in government buildings. And our farewell banquet was going to be in the government buildings. Well, you can't have a banquet when the boss man is lying in state. So they put us to a township, and it was a lovely day. They had a lovely tent, and we were treated like kings. But the real treatment that we got was the entertainment by the children, and it was terrific. Now, we had our dinner, and Hazel was on the same table, and Hazel spotted the kids having their supper over on the other end of the playground at the school, sitting on concrete steps. And Hazel said to me, have you got any badges? Had half a dozen in her pocket. She rooted through her purse and found another half dozen. Come on, she said, we'll go and say thanks to the kids. So we went over to the kids and we sat in amongst them. This is the amazing thing. Remember, this is in this country that's ravaged with AIDS. Half of the population was killed in the conflict with South Africa. And so it's a pretty poor country. And these kids were there. All the girls were in love with David Beckham, every single one of them. in the middle of Africa, really, you know, down the southwest coast. All the girls were in love with David Beckham, and all the boys were supporting either Manchester United or Liverpool. Now, you've got, you pay your money, you get your choice. But Hazel went and brought these kids into the centre of the world, and we were talking to the kids. And one little story that stays with me forever. There was a little lad that was standing, he'd be about 14. And I said, what do you want to do when you grow up? I've got to be a doctor. I said, oh, why? What do you want to be a doctor for? He said, well, me, Nan. I said, oh, your Nan? What about your mum? No, mum has died. She died of AIDS. His dad was killed in the conflict. And that's another thing about Africa. You learn different things. Well, I do anyway. It's a two-way street. We tend to think that we all know it all. In Africa, the tribal solution to age is to bring them into the family. Here in the West, our idea that once you're 40, They want to put you into a home, don't they? Well, they do in my case, that's for sure, usually in a straitjacket. But true, and in Africa, it's the reverse. I know which is right. So we should be learning from Africa, not Africa learning from us. And so you go and learn these lessons, or I think you do anyway. And I certainly learned that lesson. But this young lad wanted to be a doctor for his gran. And I said, why for your gran? Well, my gran says we've had a doctor, we've had an engineer, we've had a teacher, and we've had a lawyer in the family. We've never had a doctor, so I want to be a doctor for me nan. And I thought, isn't that wonderful? Here's this lad thinking of his nan. He wanted to be a doctor. I hope he has become a doctor. I really do hope he has become a doctor. These are the trips that I've enjoyed. I've learned lessons from them, and I've tried to practice some of the lessons that I've learned here. It's kept me socialism alive, if nothing else. It shows me that, you know, no matter how bad you think things are here in the Isle of Man, they're a dozen times worse elsewhere, and we should be grateful for the opportunities that we've got. And that's why I support the spending of money overseas, where it's so easy to say, no thank you, we should spend it all here at home. I think we have a duty to help others that are much worse than ourselves. Perhaps that's the Methodist in me coming to the fore. But I don't care whether it is or whether it's not. I do believe we have a duty to do that. So here you have a Peel Govic who's travelled in the autumn of his life pretty well round the world a few times. And have I enjoyed it? You bet I've enjoyed it. But I think I've tried to fly the flag for the Isle of Man. And I don't think I've ever let you down. I don't think I have anyway. I hope I haven't. And I think there's no other place, like I said about Joyce Young, that I would want to live than other than here in the Isle of Man. So feel free, I've done far, far too much talking. Feel free to ask me any questions you like. Thank you. Don't be shy, don't let me down.
I've just got to confront our speaker this evening, because I know that Eddie's lived a life of integrity and honesty and now aiming for longevity as well. But you'd be interested to know, everybody, that because perhaps some of you don't all know that I work in Hansard, so I have the privilege of listening to Eddie and all the others and Tim and the rest of them most weeks. And there was a nice one, which I wasn't actually present at, when you were talking about the Harbours Bill at the beginning of February. And, I've got the wrong page. There was a lot of it. And discussing the Harbours Bill, and you had a word on this one. And you said, listen to this carefully, everybody. So, this is a fair bill. It's got 80 clauses. So I've no difficulty with Captain Brew sitting there. But I am forced back to when I took through the 1886 legislation.
True?
Is it?
Yes.
You told us you were born in 1938.
The abolition. The abolition of the 1886. Yes.
The abolition
of
it. You've got an answer.
1886. It was that thick. And it had been amended about 400 times. It was that thick. James,
the Attorney General was
Jack Curran. And even he said he didn't know anything about it. He said, you're the only living expert, Lowy, on the 1884 Act. That's true, though.
That's it. There's the answer, then.
Yes. You didn't think I put through the original, did you?
Yes, you did.
But if that's what I said, and I cannot deny that I said it, all I can tell you is that I meant that.
Great. Thank you.
Rooting through this, and I've got another one before you ask another question.
Fine.
I was in, where was the meeting? Not Pitcairn, just near Pitcairn, Norfolk Island. And I was invited out for dinner that night, a little tiny, 4 miles square, slap in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And they said, you're going to dinner with a doctor, with Dr. McCulloch. And I thought, I thought it was the local GP. Got there, very swish part. Said, you'll go at 7 o'clock, you'll be home at 10. Got there, Cutting a long story short, a cat sat on my knee. She said, I can't believe that. You're the only man that that cat has ever taken to, ever in its life. I said, I've got seven cats. I lived up at the Erie at the time. I said, I've got seven cats, your garage cats. What are garage cats? I said, oh, they're in the garage and I feed them twice a day. And you know, Colleen McCulloch, anybody know Colleen McCulloch?
Yeah.
Pat will. I knew Hazelwood, she's a lady of letters. She wrote The Thornbirds. There's Colleen. Colleen writes me a letter every Christmas, a 10-page letter telling me everything that goes on in the island, you know. She gets a postcard from me, you know. Still alive, doing well, anytime you're in town, pop in to see me. But Colleen was a terrific lady. By the way, I didn't get home till 2:30 in the morning. But it was only, as I say, 4 miles square, so we didn't need the bus, we walked. Sorry about that, nope. Chairman.
That's fine. I think it's been fascinating. And we've wallowed in nostalgia, both when you've been speaking and when we've been talking together. We've both been wallowing in nostalgia of the old days and the old Manx days. And I think it's been truly fascinating. I don't know if you agree with me, but I'm not seeing any sort of dismal faces here. So I think we should give them another round of applause. That's just a little token. It's not sufficient, really, for what you've done. I'm not talking about
not at all.
Appreciation.
Anybody like to see these photographs? There's only a few of them, and I don't do slides. But anyway, come up and have a skeet.
Okay. Why are you doing that?
There's one of Hazel Hannon.
Sorry.
Yes, oh yes, in Brussels. I'll tell on you. Who's with you? Go on. Lord Kinnock.
Yeah.
Neil Kinnock.
Mm.
Thank you. That lady is from the pit. She's a direct descendant of Fletcher Christian, the Newton University.
It's in the news again, isn't it?
Direct descendant of Fletcher Christian, the daughter of the Isle of Man, you know, the connection is there. She was there. That's called the Kinnock. I've got all of this. And that's me as in at the front of the hall with head down. Didn't she? Yeah. Teddy was a wonderful man, full of laughs. And that was the speaker of the Doyle and the Isle of Man there.